Chapter 5. Setting off on the voyage. The next morning, I took Queequeg to sign on as one of the crew of the Pequod. As we were walking toward the ship, Queequeg, carrying his harpoon, Captain Peleg shouted to us from the deck near his tent.
"You did not tell me your friend was a cannibal from the South Seas. We do not let any cannibals on board unless they can prove that they have become Christians."
"Yes," said Captain Bildad, who came out of the tent. "He must show us papers to prove that he is a member of a church."
"Well," I said, quickly thinking of a lie, "he's a member of the First Church." I knew that many South Sea Islanders who sailed on ships out of Nantucket had become members of different churches.
"He's been a member of that church for a long time," I added. "I never saw him go to that church, and I pass it every Sunday," said Bildad. "How long has he been a member?" "Not long, I guess, young man."
"I don't know anything about the First Church in Nantucket," I replied. "What I know is that Queequeg has been a member of the First Church since he was born."
"Young man," said Bildad seriously, "what church do you mean? Answer me."
I continued to think quickly. "I mean, sir, the same church that you and I and Captain Peleg and Queequeg and everyone belongs to. The great church whose members are all the religious people in the whole world."
"Well said, young man. A churchman could not have said anything better," cried Peleg. "Come on board, young man, and bring your friend. What a fine harpoon he has there. Tell me, Queequeg, did you ever stand at the front of a whaleboat? Did you ever hit a whale with that fine harpoon?"
Without saying a word, Queequeg jumped up on the bulwarks and into the bow of one of the whaleboats hanging from the side of the ship. He bent his left knee and lifted the harpoon, pointing it out over the water.
"Captain, you see small wood on water. Suppose it eye of whale. Watch."
He aimed the harpoon, then threw it so that it went straight through the middle of the small piece of wood.
"Now," said Queequeg quietly,
pulling the harpoon back to the boat by the line attached to it.
"Suppose it whale eye. Well, whale dead now."
"Be quick, Bildad," said Peleg to his partner. "Get the ship's papers. We must have Queequeg in one of our boats. Queequeg, we will give you the 90th lay, and that is more than a harpooner sailing out of Nantucket has ever been given before."
When Bildad had brought the papers, Peleg asked Queequeg,
"Can you sign your name, or do you want to make your mark?"
In answer to this question, Queequeg, who knew what to do, took the pen which Bildad was holding out to him. Then, on the correct part of the paper, he copied a pattern which was tattooed on his arm. Queequeg and I had just left the Pequod when a stranger called to us.
"Sailors, have you signed on to sail in that ship?"
He was a huge man, in dirty seaman's clothes.
"Have you signed on?" he repeated,
pointing at the Pequod. He spoke in a strange way, and I wondered if he was mad. "Yes," I said, "we have just signed the papers."
"You haven't seen him yet, have you?"
"Who?" I asked. The man's way of speaking worried me.
"Captain Ahab."
"No, we have not seen him yet. He has been sick, they say, but he is getting better, and he'll be all right again before long."
"All right again before long,"
the stranger said, laughing wildly.
"Captain Ahab will never be all right."
"What do you know about him?" I asked. The mad stranger laughed again.
"I know things about him. You do not know anything at all."
"I know that he lost his leg," I said, wondering what he meant. Do you know all about it?
Yes, I think so, I said. I wondered what secrets this man knew. The stranger suddenly pointed again at the Pequod and said,
You have signed on. Well, that is done then. I suppose some sailors must go with Ahab. Goodbye to you, sailors. I am sorry that I stopped you.
Let's leave this crazy man, Queequeg, I said. Then, as we walked away, I turned and shouted to him, Tell me your name, will you?
Elijah,
came the reply. Elijah, I thought. Elijah was the prophet in the Bible who prophesied the death of the evil King Ahab. This ominous meeting with the stranger made me worried about the captain who I hadn't met and about the voyage ahead of me. A message came the next day to all the inns in Nantucket where the crew of the Pequod were staying. We were asked to take our bags and sea chests to the ship, which was going to leave soon. There was much activity on board the Pequod. Captain Peleg never left her and watched all the men who were repairing sails and rigging and packing the hold from his tent on deck. Captain Bildad went to and from the ship all day, buying everything that was needed and keeping a list of it. Everyone knows how many things are needed in a house. Well, think about how much you need on a ship which is going on a voyage across the wide oceans, far from bakers, doctors, and bankers. This is true of merchant ships, of course, but whaling ships make much longer voyages, of 3 years and more. And whaling voyages are extremely dangerous, so the possibility of accidents is much greater. So there is a great need for extra boats, extra masts, extra lines, extra harpoons, extra everything, in fact. Many things like meat, bread, and water were already on board when Queequeg and I took everything we possessed to be put in the hold. But still, many more things kept arriving. In their work, the two captains were helped by Bildad's sister, a kind-hearted old lady who everyone called Aunt Charity. She, too, went to and from the ship all day. She was determined that everyone should be comfortable and safe on board. During the next few days, Queequeg and I often visited the ship, and each time I asked about Captain Ahab. Each time, the two captains would answer that he was getting better, and he was expected on board that day. If I had been honest with myself, I would have said that I felt very worried about going on a 3-year voyage with a captain who I had never seen. But like many people who know that there may be something wrong, I did not want to think about it. I said nothing, and I tried to think nothing. At last, we heard that the Pequod was going to sail the following day. So the next morning, Queequeg and I got up very early. It was nearly 6 o'clock on a foggy winter morning when we reached the harbor. I could see some gray shapes in front of us in the fog. There are some sailors running ahead of us, I think, I said to Queequeg. Let's hurry. The Pequod must be going to leave at dawn. Suddenly, I heard a voice I recognized.
Going on board?
Cried Elijah, as he came up behind us and put his hands on both our shoulders, stopping us. Let go of me, I said.
Go away,
said Queequeg, shaking himself. Elijah, I said, please let go of us. My friend and I are going to the Indian and Pacific Oceans and would prefer to get on the ship.
You are you?
He replied.
Are you coming back before breakfast?
He's crazy, Queequeg, I said. Come on.
Hey!
Cried Elijah as we started to move away, putting a hand on my shoulder a second time.
Did you see any men going toward that ship?
I answered him. Yes, I thought I saw 4 or 5 men, but it was too foggy to be sure.
Very foggy,
said Elijah.
Good morning to you.
We were walking away from him again, when for a third time, I felt his hand on my shoulder.
See if you can find them,
he said quietly in my ear. Then, walking away, he turned and called,
Oh, I was going to warn you against, but never mind, never mind. It's too late now. Goodbye. I shan't see you again.
And finally, Elijah disappeared into the fog, leaving me confused and surprised by his words. Stepping onto the deck of the Pequod, we could hear no sound anywhere. We walked all over the ship and found no one except a rigger below deck so deeply asleep that we could not wake him. Those sailors we saw, Queequeg, where can they have gone? I said. But Queequeg had not seen them. And if I hadn't heard the strange words of Elijah, I would have thought that I hadn't really seen men moving in the fog. Queequeg and I sat down next to the rigger. Queequeg lit his tomahawk pipe, and we passed it between us, till the rigger started to make noises and finally woke up.
You smokers, who are you?
He asked sleepily. We've signed on as sailors, I replied. When does she sail?
She sails today,
he replied.
The captain came on board last night.
Captain Ahab?
Who else would it be?
Said the rigger. I was going to ask him some questions about Ahab when we heard a noise above us on deck.
Starbuck's awake, said the rigger. He's a fair man and a good first mate, but he expects us to do our jobs.
The rigger got up and went up onto the deck with us following him. The sun had now risen. Soon the crew were coming on board the ship in twos and threes. Riggers, including the man we had spoken to, were finishing the rigging on the masts. Several people were busy bringing the last items on board. Starbuck and the other mates were busy too, but Captain Ahab was below in his cabin. It was nearly midday on that cold, short Christmas day before the riggers, Peleg and Bildad, finally left the Pequod so that Starbuck could take the ship out to sea. When Captain Peleg spoke to the crew for the last time before he and Bildad left, there were tears in his eyes.
Good luck to you, Starbuck, and to you all. And never forget that on this day in 3 years, we will have a hot supper waiting for you in our dear Nantucket. Hurrah and away. Come, Bildad.
Then the Pequod set off alone into the cold Atlantic Ocean.